everywhere, man. I cross the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel while I have my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Hi, I'm here with Joanna Brand-Smith. Thank you so much and welcome to the program. It's good to have you.
Thank you for inviting me on. This is so exciting. This year has been so exciting and overwhelming and not at all the year I expected to have in many different ways, which we can talk about, but it's very exciting.
You're speaking for many of us. Yeah. I'm sure that you didn't think that you would be living your life over Zoom as many of us did.
I didn't think I would be running for office. I didn't think, and then when I thought I was running for office, I certainly didn't expect to be running for office in the way that I am running for office right now.
Certainly. Well, I want to get right into the questions here, just to be respectful of your time. So something that I noticed when I was looking at your background is that you have a diverse set of academic experiences, and you did coursework in philosophy, law, and fine art. And I'm actually somebody that has degrees in religion, politics, and disaster management. And so your background says to me that you're a kindred spirit of a generalist in a sea of specialists.
Yeah, I love academia and I love learning.
Yeah. And I'm curious if you can tell me how your diverse set of skills helps you to better articulate, understand, and solve the problems of your constituents, since you have just a wide variety of skill sets that you're bringing to this?
Well, I believe generally that different perspectives allow for a stronger answer to a problem. When you can consider many sides of an argument, you can then consider what might be coming at you in terms of opposition and try to plan ahead of things. But specifically, I'll go through each of them specifically. Fine arts, I come to my blue Democrat and my liberal arts background very honestly. My mother was an art teacher and she's a fabulous art teacher. In fact, I have her, it's covered by my sign now, but her artwork is there. And I can show you. Those are the ring lights. Can you see those paintings?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic.
So she's an art teacher and she's fabulous. And my father was a speech teacher. So for me, I was doing theater since I was very little. And now I teach theater and I teach music and I coach competitive high school speaking, public speaking. And the biggest thing that I believe the arts are so important to our culture. I believe they're important as children. I believe they help us express ourselves, and I believe that a community that invests in its arts creates a unique identity for itself. But most importantly, what I find in fine arts, especially theater, is theater teaches you a lot of things that sports teaches you. Not to knock sports, they are just as important. But theater does teach you that you can't always be the star, that you have to be part of a team. It teaches you to get to a project and you have to work there together. It teaches you to move when you dance. But the thing that fine arts specifically teaches you is empathy. When I ask one of my students to portray a role, or when I have to portray a role, it forces me or them to understand that the way that I consider something might not be the same way another person considers it. And that builds in empathy in a person, because now I'm considering what other people might feel like or how other people might come at the same problem. So that's where the arts background comes from. And I think that that will specifically help in politics. And it does indeed help in my day job as a criminal defense attorney, because I have to be able to talk to juries and I have to be able to help them understand that everything isn't what it seems all the time. And I have to be able to understand with my clients, who often have a very different life experience than I do, and help them with whatever they need. I mean, we have a program in my county that I send my clients to regularly. It's a drug court program, and it helps them get drug treatment. And they help them so much, down to getting glasses for them if they need new eyeglasses. Bus passes, helping them find housing, it is a program that is meant to holistically help someone with a philosophy that's pretty obvious in law. Whatever argument you're making, you have to think about, okay, what argument is going to come at me? And that particular, from my philosophy degree, that particular thing is really funny to my friends and family, because when I'm arguing with them over something, even something stupid, in my own brain, I've already thought about what the possible counter argument is, and then I've answered that argument, and then I've answered another counter argument, and now I'm four steps ahead of where we were when we were actually talking about it. And they're always like, where are you? I'm like, well, that's what it's like to live in my brain. So it helps so much understanding that your perspective is not the only one, and it helps so much understanding what your counter argument would be and how to handle that. So I think that is what makes my diverse background really helps make me qualified to be a representative.
Yeah. I think another, I was thinking about what links these three things, you know, fine arts, philosophy, and law. And I was thinking of presence, just like to being like both, all three of those things, I feel like teach you to be like, I never studied law, but specific with fine art and philosophy is just like being there in the moment and like really like thinking through everything and just being like, you know what I'm saying? Just like really right there and with it. And I mean, I'm sure that this is something that you're talking about with your clients as an attorney as well, just to be there and present.
It's about the communication. They're all a way to communicate things. What is art if it is not something to communicate something? Like Picasso, anything by Picasso. His cubism period looked very strange, right? And the point there was, I think, the message was there are different perspectives here. But while it should be noted that he was trying to convey different perspectives, but he, as a human being, could not necessarily portray all of them. So I think that the arts and the philosophy, of course, is what are we talking about? What is a thing? I mean, I wrote one of my biggest philosophy papers on symbols that now have taken on absolute meanings, like the power button, the circle with a line. We know now always it's a power button, right? And we've done that without any words at all. So I think the running link through that, just like the triangle for play, right? And the two lines for pause. So I think the line running through them is communication.
Yeah. I want to like move on to the next question, but I think it's keeping with this notion of empathy that you brought up. As a criminal defense attorney, I am sure that you've seen how from cradle to grave, we have a system that just chews people up, and how that no specific technocratic fix will solve all of our issues. But we just have a series of complex interlocking problems that like continually feed off of each other and produce these emerging results of violence and poverty and just awful things that we have to deal with as a society. And yet when you're doing the work of politics, people often are looking for a series of identifiable issue stances that address particular components of this overall mess. I'm curious if you can just talk about navigating this tension of like seeing this complex system and then trying to like, you know, work out how you can better it in office.
It is overwhelming, and the best way that I have been able to look at it, and I do believe this in truth, the answer is a holistic answer. The system that we have set up is absolutely a set of interlocking mechanisms that get fired every time we interact with society. And the first step is acknowledging that. Like, the first step is acknowledging that, yes, there is such a thing as white privilege. And it's not necessarily an active thing. White privilege is not active racism. It is simply understanding that because you were born with a different color skin, you have different opportunities. The best thing that I've ever been able to use discussing white privilege is my father, who is he does know some things, but in his old age, he seemed to like go backwards. I don't know how this happened, but he has. And he argued with me one day saying, how can you tell me I have white privilege when my father died, my mother couldn't make the bills and we almost lost the house. And I said, Dad, that's it right there. Your white privilege. Your white privilege is that your bottom line is that you had a house. Your worst case scenario is that you lose the house. That's what white privilge is.
Still pretty bad, but.
I'm not taking away from that. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm not saying it's not bad. But the fact that your baseline was owning a home should tell you, oh, there are a lot of people who don't even own homes or who struggle to keep their apartments or who in other places live in basement apartments. Just an example of that. And I think the best thing that we can start to do is it starts with our education system. We specifically, and one of my biggest platforms is education. Our schools, for the 120th for us, I believe that if we want to get our communities in order, we need to start with our schools. Because what's the first thing people ask when they move to a new location? This might be different for you.
No, it's always, what are the schools like?
Exactly. So if we have school districts that people want to come to, A, our kids are getting educated, which is always a plus. The most important thing in a democracy is absolutely an educated electorate. And then we have people who want to move here, and that will help bring in businesses, which will help bring in jobs, which will help bring in other people who want to work in those jobs, and it builds up from there. But to be even more specific, to me, if we are going to start really pushing back against this system, we need to start investing heavily in early childhood education. When a child is 4 and 3 and 5, they are making connections in their brain at the most rapid pace that they will for their entire lives. And if we can encourage that, that will only get better. There's a lot of neuroscience that helps back this up, which is why I'm a big proponent of investing in early childhood education, investing in early intervention programs. Right now in Pennsylvania, we spend about $14,000 a year per child in school. By contrast, we spend $160,000 per every kid involved in the juvenile justice system. And that's not just placement. That's not like kid jail. That is every child involved in that system, because there's so much going on. That's more than 10 times the amount we are spending to educate them. And to me, when we are spending more than 10 times the amount of money to punish them than we are to educate our children, what else is there to say? Clearly something is wrong.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we do have a pre-K counts grant that's available to people that are young people that are a certain percentage from the poverty line, but would you want to expand pre-K to just a universal access to pre-K, or are you talking about something completely different here?
I'm talking about universal pre-K. Yes, absolutely. And I'm talking about universal kindergarten. And I'm talking about universal pre-K.
Okay, absolutely.
The studies show that if you make those connections early, earlier the better. And like, for example, reading, there is a point, I don't know what the age is off the top of my head, but there is a point with every child when they like to read because they're excited that they've learned how to read. And if you continue to foster that and you catch them while they're enjoying reading, that will only continue with positive reinforcement, but you have to do it at the correct time. You can't wait. Just like with the arts programs, we are notoriously cutting arts programs for younger kids and asking high school students to all of a sudden appreciate something they've never been even exposed to.
Yeah.
That doesn't help. In our juvenile justice system, we treat kids at 18 as an adult, but in reality, we know from neuroscience that the part of a male's brain, specifically male, the part of a male's brain that says, oh, short-term consequences, short-term like excitability, and the part of a male's brain that creates that thinks about long-term consequences, there's not even a pathway between those two spots in the brain until they are 27 at least. It's a theory. It's called like the 26-year-old boy, the 27-year-old man. So we have juveniles that we treat as adults when in reality that pathway has not even begun to, it's not even connected. For women, it gets connected earlier. And I think that's obvious in what we see every day in our world.
That's totally obvious as a 27-year-old man.
It's important to think about things like that. And the other thing that chews people up is right now we have a system that is based in a carceral bargain, which means that if you do something wrong, your liberty is taken away. That's the carceral bargain that we have struck as a society with each other. Not you don't get food, not you don't get medical treatment, not you're denied any other rights. It is specifically your liberty is curtailed. But we have created a system where the collateral consequences go beyond, far beyond the current carceral bargain that we have. And if we want to change that, we can. That means we just have to create a different bargain in society with how we deal with crime. As it stands right now, that's where we are. But unfortunately, the collateral consequences are, I think, what you're referring to when you say that chews people up. I will never forget. I had a client who I had at sentencing, and at sentencing, I often try to make sure I know my clients because they don't just end up in front of me as a public defender on accident most of the time. And he had said to me, by the time he was 4 years old, he knew what gunshots sounded like and that he had to get on the floor. I can't imagine what that was like as a 4-year-old. As a 4-year-old, I was having princess parties. That's a completely different world. And until we start acknowledging that things like that happen, we're not going to get very far.
Yeah, it just, when I think about how complex these systems are, it gets a little overwhelming to think about how one single solution can do anything. But I really like what you say about, you know, just start first with education, because our young people are our future. And we can't do any, you know, we need to start with them.
Not to sound really cheesy, but the young people are our future. I mean, it's true. I think that's the way we started. But you are absolutely right. There is not one solution for all of these problems. There is not one problem. there has to be a holistic way that we look at it. And that is part of why I was so interested in having a diverse set of studies, because it helps me look at a problem like from all different angles and think about it.
Yeah. So your district, I mean, it's traditionally a more conservative district. Phyllis Mundy did have the seat for about 25 years. I'm curious though, if you could explain who you think is like sort of the average voter in your district, like what are they like, and what are they looking for in a representative?
Phyllis Mundy held the seat for about 23 years, and now it's been held for 6 years by Coffer. So now we're looking at 3 decades ago, it was a red district. It has changed greatly in that time. And in fact, in Luzerne County, I'm not sure if you are familiar with this little tidbit about Luzerne County, or maybe this is why you were looking at us. We managed to flip Pennsylvania for Trump in 2016. That's all I'll say about that. But in Luzerne County, the bluest, by far, the bluest district, I would say, is 120th. We have a more than 5,000 registration advantage. We have a D plus 8.4% performance advantage. And even in the primary, and primaries are not indicative of general elections. However, Even in the primary, I came out with more than 1,000 votes ahead of my opponent. In fact, there were 6 House races going on in Luzerne County. So 11 races, 11 candidates, because one was unopposed. And out of all of those candidates in Luzerne County, I came out with the highest amount of votes in the primary. And I'm a first-time candidate.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. It was really, really amazing. I just really didn't want it to be embarrassing. And I was like, as it kept going, I was like, am I awake? Am I maybe drunk? It has just been one thing after another. This year has been so difficult in so many ways. And I try to keep a levity about myself. You have to, I think. So like, I often reminisce about 2016, and I often think, do you remember when we thought 2016 was a dumpster fire? We had no idea. Because it just is constant. And some of it is coming to a head that is very scary, but is absolutely necessary. The civil rights movement, we have a precedent for a pandemic. It's 100 years old, but nonetheless, we have a precedent for it. We have a precedent for a president being impeached. And we have a precedent for a civil rights movement, but we do not have a precedent for all of those three things converging at the same time. So this year has been extraordinary. And I think, go ahead.
It has. I want to ask you, press you a little bit more though. Cause I mean, Luzerne County, it went for Obama twice and then Trump pretty heavily. So like what do you think that your voters are concerned with? Like why?
My voters are concerned with putting food on the table and making ends meet. That's what a normal voter in the 120th is looking for. It is property taxes that are causing seniors to have to choose between life-saving prescriptions and keeping their home. We flipped, I think, not necessarily because people liked Trump, but because they didn't like Hillary, which is a whole other conversation that we could have that I am not interested in having right now. I don't have the emotional wherewithal, I think, to have it.
You and me both.
And I think that a lot of small businesses in the area really thought that Donald Trump was going to help them. And I felt very badly about that because I don't...
He doesn't care about anybody but himself. And yeah. If his actions over the last 72 hours haven't proven that to anybody undecided about that, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and I think it was a lot of people wanted someone who was different. I mean, I think they wanted not a politician. But I say this to my debate kids. Sometimes my debate kids are like, oh, I'm debating someone who's never debated before. I'm super excited because they don't know what they're doing. And then they walk out of the round and they're like, that was actually a super hard round because the other person had no clue what they were doing and couldn't and didn't like abide by any of the normal decorum or even respect that a debater who has debated at least a tournament or two kind of knows how things work. And I'm not saying that things have to work like we normally used to have it work all the time. I'm not saying that's always best either. But it is difficult to have a complete shift out of that kind of thinking in this, like it has been. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And just as an aside, I was really happy to see on your website that you're for reforming the property taxes. I think a lot of people on the left are not willing to go into that issue because it is like a linchpin in funding our schools. But I think it's just a totally unfair tax, especially for those living on fixed income.
Well, and it shouldn't be the linchpin for our schools. That's the problem. The problem is that we need to figure out a better way to fund our schools. And there are plenty of ways that we can fund our schools in a better way. First of all, the property tax, if you have a kid in school and you have kids of school age and you pay into the school system, I get it. I think that's fair. However, this area specifically, the 120th is special for two reasons. One, we have a large older population, senior population, whose homes often were built by themselves or their parents. And they shouldn't be forced out of those homes. But secondly, in the 120th, out of the 50 largest employers in Luzerne County, only 7 of them operate at all in the 120th. So we also already lose out on the larger employers who would pay larger amounts of property tax because they are using up a larger amount of space of property. So we don't get... It's a little harder in the 120th with property taxes because of those things. There are many other ways that we can fund our schools that we have not been able to get to because the Democrats have not been in the majority. And in the Pennsylvania House, when you have the majority, that means you set the agenda. You say what gets heard. You say what reaches the floor. And the Republicans have been in charge for so long, have been in the majority for so long, it's hard for the Democrats to even get things to the floor. But there are plans to go to the floor as soon as we get this majority, and we will absolutely have this majority in 2021. I really believe we will because people are beginning to understand what is needed, and I think people are beginning to see that career politicians aren't always the best choice.
Sorry, go ahead.
So we have, we're a natural gas state. We're the only natural gas state that does not charge an extraction tax.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous. It's just completely absurd that we do this.
Right there. We don't use host agreements with plants, and we need to. We absolutely need to because we're losing on so much money. And the Delaware loophole is another huge thing that needs to be closed. Right now, businesses... Delaware is like the Cayman Islands of the United States. Businesses can operate there without any tax.
74% of corporations that operate in Pennsylvania. It's insane. I cannot believe that this is a thing.
And pay no taxes in Pennsylvania because they're incorporated in Delaware. And I'm not asking to break the backs of companies. That is not what I'm interested in either, because then companies won't stay here and we won't have the jobs. But what I am interested in is people paying their fair share. That's all.
Yeah, and if they paid their fair share, then we could actually reduce the amount of taxes that people had to pay in the first place.
There are other different kinds of programs that we have, that I personally have thought about and that have been made, have had noise made about them, like increasing the sales tax on luxury items and property tax credit or rebate. So we're ready. We just have to have a majority so that we can get this plan to the floor to help our citizens with property taxes.
Yeah, I have two more questions. And the first is, I've been asking this of everybody that I've been interviewing, but what is something that you learned that surprised you while you ran, while you're running?
I'm not a person who ever expected to run for office. I did not expect to run for office this year. My district made national news last year with a lunch letter sent home by one of our schools. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I did. I didn't know that was this district, though.
That was in this district. And it threatened foster care to kids with unpaid lunch bills. And that made me stop and say, hang on a second. There should have been somebody paying attention to the school district, aside from just the school board. There is a state representative who does this. So that's kind of why I got into the game, because when I looked into it, I found out that not only had he been in his seat for three terms, he had been running virtually unopposed. And that's actually the interesting legislative history that I wanted to share with you before when I was telling you about the numbers from the primary. We actually have a Democratic advantage, but no one's really run a campaign against him. This is the first and strongest campaign against him that he's ever seen. This is the strongest campaign for this seat that has happened since he's been in the seat. But the most surprising thing, I think, is from someone who never expected to run, who didn't really consider this, is how much support I'm getting. People who, because I grew up here, I was literally born in the district. I was born in a hospital that does not exist anymore. It's now a mental health facility. I grew up in the district. I now live in the district and I work in the district and I went to high school in the district. So I know a lot of people here and I'm on our local community theater board. I'm on our local Fine Arts Fiesta board and I was on our local children's theater board for a long time too. And I left because my term was up and I was running. The support has just been extraordinary, especially from the people who have known me quite literally since before I was born. You were the second person to interview me from Sweden. Well, actually he was, from Finland, but spoke Swedish and it was in the Swedish newspaper in Swedish. See, this is so
weird. Yeah, that's super weird. Yeah.
Unbelievable. But people who I didn't know existed are coming out to support me. People who I have known for my whole life are coming out to support me. And that, you know, we're all kind of knuckleheads when we're teenagers, right? Like, I wouldn't necessarily want to be judged right now by what I did when I was 16. I think we can all feel that. But to hear my teachers and my peers, my fellow students come out and say, you will be great at this. This is something that you should absolutely do. And we think that you're going to do great things in Harrisburg. And you're going to do great things for our community has just been overwhelmingly extraordinary. And I am so grateful for it. And such a nice surprise.
That's great. I often find that when I'm canvassing in Pennsylvania, the first question people ask is, well, where are they from? You know, people really care about that.
NEPA really likes NEPA.
Yeah.
it is a special place. For good reason. We have very good history. I mean, my favorite question is when people are like, oh, you live in Wyoming, like Wyoming, the state Wyoming? I'm like, no, like Wyoming, the state was named after us. Because you know, 13 colonies and whatnot.
Yeah.
So we have a great sense of history here, and we have families who have been here for a really long time, and probably living here is part of the reason why I really believe in the democracy that we have. America is the only country that since its birth has said over and over again, we can do better. We can do better. And we're gonna do better. It's what we do. I know that the civil rights movement that happened before I was born in the 60s and 70s, and I know the civil rights movement that's happening now matters and can succeed because our entire country is a testament. And I'm not saying the founding fathers are perfect. They certainly were not. They certainly didn't include a lot of the founding mothers, but you understand what I mean. It was really the first time an underdog had really overcome a global superpower. And it is a quintessential story of oppressed people rising up and saying, no, we will not accept this anymore, and we can do better than this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very inspiring moment of history. The last question I have for you, more of a silly one, is what have you been streaming during the pandemic?
Okay, so Netflix just lost Parks and Rec. So I was binging Parks and Rec to make sure I got through Parks and Rec one whole time.
Nice.
And Leslie Knope is a personal hero of mine. I love her. She's so funny. And Amy Poehler is a genius. Also, the new show Lovecraft Country. Have you seen that at all?
I haven't seen it. I've seen some commercials for it, though.
Very scary. And I'm a horror. Like, Halloween is my favorite holiday. You can see my little Halloween decoration.
Yeah.
And I really like scary movies. Maybe it's because they're only 90 minutes long, and that's like about how long I have. Like, they're generally not long movies. But Lovecraft Country is so timely in the way it discusses gender and race and the possibility of what we could be. It is, they did not produce it, obviously, with knowing what was in store for 2020, but man, did they get lucky, because it is a show we need for 2020. And I've also been binging, oh my goodness, what's the last name of it? I had one more. I can't think of it. The West Wing.
Oh, nice. Classic.
West Wing, yes. Because I've never seen it before. And I feel like now is a perfect time to see it.
Yeah, I've actually never watched it either. It's a confession. It's a good one to play for me for in the Two Truths and a Lie.
My parents loved it when I was growing up, but I just never really got into it. But I'm very much enjoying watching it now. And I'm also enjoying seeing very, very young Allison Janney and a very, very young Rob Lowe and Lisa Edelstein. Oh my goodness, they're all so young.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure interviewing you.
Thank you. I really appreciate your attention. This seat is so important. This is, like I mentioned, this seat is a seat we should have had years ago, except no one was running. If we don't flip this seat now, it can set Pennsylvania back 10 years in terms of flipping the entire state blue. And we absolutely have the demographics to do it. We've been working hard. We know we can do it. The only question is whether or not we will have the resources to do it. But we believe we can. If you want to get in touch with my campaign, by all means, we'd love to hear from everybody. We have so many volunteer opportunities because a lot of it is remote. For example, phone calling voters, you can do from anywhere. You can be Zoom casual with like pajama pants on and a top on, or you can just be completely casual and call volunteers because it's remote. And to do that, you can go to my website, which is PA, like Pennsylvania, P, Papa, Alpha, 4, F-O-R, Foxtrot, Oscar, Romero, Romeo, JBS, Juliet, Bravo, Sierra. I'm trying to learn the military alphabet, because when you talk about like Inmates always have like numbers, and like when you talk to corrections officers and police officers, they always use that. And I'm trying very hard to learn it. So it's PA4JBS.com. Or you can grab me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is the same, PA4JBS.com, and my Facebook is also the same.
Facebook. Great. Well, it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's been so much. This is one of the things I was talking about, the amazing support that comes out of nowhere, that makes you keep going, that gives you the confidence and knowing that people are with you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Truly my pleasure. I've been